Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Concern you. Hello and welcome to edition 239 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula One. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK, where Team Lotus thrived, Martin Brundle learned to ride with stabilizers, and George Russell shares a coffee with Alex Albon. We are sat here at the iconic Rushcutters public house on the outskirts of Norwich. We are also going out on Future Radio, as well as across all our podcast channels. And in our 8th season, we are here to review the 2019 Australian Grand Prix. I am sports journalist Michael Bailey, and joining us on tonight's pod, we have 2 times Beckles car champion Kyle Cumbers.
Good evening.
And a long-awaited return, I think it's been about a year, motoring journalist David Tillier, DT.
It's good to be back.
It's lovely to have you. It has been a while. And for some curious reason, DT, I've been listening to some of the first podcasts we did back in 2012. You were there in quite early on. You've been, as was Kyle, in fact, you were both. This is original. We were both here in the original season 8 years ago. Who'd have thought we'd still be going?
Well, I don't think any of us really, but you know, it's a testament to the quality of those early podcasts that we are still going.
Oh, it's definitely not, having listened to them. How are you? How's your world?
I'm pretty well, actually. Busy as always, but yeah, it's nice to have a day where I'm available to actually do the pod, because I have wanted to come on. My schedule has just been all over the place, so it's great to be here.
It's great, and hopefully it will happen nice and regularly, or as regularly as you can muster, of course. Loads of different titles you've been involved in. We had Gridwalk TV, that was a good one. Dave on Cars is, of course, the Instagram. You work on the Lotus Drivers Club magazine, is it?
Yep, editor of Chicane magazine for Lotus Drivers Club.
And you got our ad in once, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Although I never saw it, so we keep saying it.
Yeah, I'm off to Birmingham on Saturday to, our magazine's been shortlisted for Club Magazine of the Year.
Well done, congratulations. So, yeah. Yeah, man.
That'd be good if I managed to pull that one off. But and still doing the motoring journalism a bit on the side, still working full time.
Paramedic.
Apparently.
Very important, really helpful and useful to have you here.
Yeah, I like to keep busy. What can I say? I'm a glutton for punishment.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, top stuff, DT. Glad you're here. Let us know if you win. Send us a picture. We'll post it on the Patreon page and all sorts. Kyle, how are you? Welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
All good?
Yeah, all good, yeah.
You've had a nice trip, haven't you?
Yeah, a few days in Amsterdam. Saw lots of pictures of Max and quite a few Red Bull t-shirts. So, yeah, it was a good few days.
I'll be honest, I wondered where that was going, but it was pictures of Max, so that's okay. Well done. So, great news. We did a season preview, of course, a week or two back. And now the season has started, so that's always good. It's always worth listening to the preview, by the way, once the racing has started, to make us all sound fairly ridiculous, even though the racing has literally only just started. But it was basically just a few hours ago that Valtteri Bottas did something I don't think we've ever seen him do in Formula 1. Absolutely smashed the Grand Prix. Complete dominance, to the point where he got out of the car and he was like, oh, don't know what to say. Don't know where that came from. It was amazing. I guess we always known that Valtteri would have a performance like that in him, but to do it bang on early in the season is remarkable. Well done.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. I sort of half expected him to get out of the car and do sort of, you know, do like a bicep curl or, you know, start doing like a load of press-ups. He was pumped up. He was on something. And sadly, I didn't get a chance to see the sort of build-up to the race. I sort of went straight in and just watched the race. So I don't know what he was like on the grid and sort of on the build-up to the race, but certainly throughout that race, clearly, and after he got out of the car, very different to the sort of the Valtteri Bottas that we're used to seeing, which is quite interesting.
Don't know if we're going to hear more because he's changed his engineer, hasn't he? Which yeah. And that did seem to. I didn't hear. Apologies if I missed it. Didn't hear any of this during testing or whichever. But it seems that, you know, new engineer, fresh outlook, refreshed. I mean, clearly the perfect start. And we'll maybe get into what happens after next. But, you know, he seems like he's in a really good place. And what he's done in the summer, he's used it really well.
Yeah, maybe it's the power of the facial hair. You probably would agree.
Fear the beard.
But yeah, he's come back obviously very strong. He started last year quite well, and then it sort of started to unravel quite
not quickly. At Australia, did he? Had an absolute nightmare in qualifying at Australia.
He spun, didn't he, in qualifying, yeah. But the sort of few races after that, he's reasonably strong and was unlucky. But yeah, if he can keep it going, then I think it's going to be an interesting year of him and Lewis and their sort of friendship. Still going, but it'll be interesting to see if that continues with if they're battling for a championship. But also, it's good for him with Mr. Ocon sort of sitting next to Toto Wolff in the garage, and that added extra pressure from that. It's good to get that sort of win on the board and answer a few questions, and away he goes.
It did seem particularly ominous that Esteban was just sat there by Toto all the way through, just to get some nice, good camera time. So fair play to him.
Quite chummy, weren't they? Chummy.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Maybe that was who Valtteri was swearing at when he said "f you" to all the doubters, who he didn't say who they were, just that there was a long list. But this is the point. I mean, as with all sports professionals, and obviously I speak to some, they you know, things get taken personally when maybe they're not meant it. It comes with the territory. These guys and girls are paid a lot of money to do what they do. It comes with the pressure, and it comes with people being critical. And sometimes that's not necessarily the same as, you know, being overly harsh or whichever, and personal. They're very different things. Valtteri, I think we'd all say this sort of performance, we know is in there because on his day he's a phenomenal racing driver. The problem is, can he do it for four or five races? Can he be genuine contention? Can he produce that consistency? That's what hasn't happened, and sometimes a mistake gets thrown in. But again, maybe that first opening race and opening qualifying of last year was part of something that knocked his confidence, and then he couldn't really recover, and in which case he's in a perfect position this season.
Yeah, I think I watched the Sky coverage, and Paul de Resta came on as Martin Brundle was running down to do the interviews, was talking about, you know, this is a new Valtteri, this is, you know, and just was sort of waxing lyrical about the potential of this. And I was, throughout the whole thing, I was thinking, well, you know, come on, let's just see how the rest of the season progressed. Yes, Valtteri had an amazing race, but we also got to remember that Lewis had a pretty poor race as well. I think there was talk of damage to his car that they found after the race. He clearly wasn't on it. The strategy probably was probably the wrong choice to bring him in when they did. And I think Lewis thought that as well. So it's not just a case that Valtteri has dominated and beat Lewis fair and square. I think Lewis had an off day as well. So I think it's a bit too early, certainly too early, to say, oh, this is going to be a new Valtteri, this is going to be a new season, it's going to be a whole new thing, because it might well be that we just get to the next race and Lewis is back on form and we have the same sort of status quo. So let's readdress it mid-season, and then I think we'll have a better idea.
It was unshakable post-race interview, wasn't it, with Lewis? Max was chasing you down, Lewis. Was that an issue? No. We had that covered. Do you know what the issues were? Yeah, I've got an idea. And I guess part of, as they pit strategy, the DT, he clearly felt they came in too early in terms of their first stop, which played its part. And we'll talk about Lewis a lot more, of course, over the coming weeks. But in terms of the team, the car, where did the sandbags go? Because literally, I think from the moment things got turned up in qualifying, it was like, okay, oh, you're really fast. And we will, of course, talk about Ferrari, I'm sure, in ways, but you can't argue. And I have to say, I did think this was the case. You look at testing, you can only read so much into it. When you get to it, Mercedes look like they've done it again.
Yeah, Australia's a bit of one-off in the first race. But, I mean, there's even talk on Friday that Red Bull and Ferrari must be hiding some pace and it's all going to come out tomorrow. And then just as the weekend went on, the gap seemed to get bigger. And I think it was it a minute between Bottas and Vettel? That's a hell of a long way, isn't it?
Well, when we're measuring race laps in milliseconds, yes.
Yes. And as he seems to describe, it's quite an edgy car, but seemed to be quick, which is the most important bit. So Bahrain's a different track, and hopefully Ferrari and Red Bull will be close, but yeah, Mercedes, we'd never write off Mercedes.
No, which, you know, 100% agree. And actually, it should be said that actually the gap in qualifying was the same as it was the previous year between Ferrari and Mercedes. But I think that the gap in the race then was a lot closer. This time, the gap seems to have got bigger when they actually got the lights out.
Yeah, I think, again, it's one of those things. I think it's hard to really tell. Like Carl said, Australia's a bit of a one-off. It's quite a unique style track. It is the first race of the season. I don't think that a minute behind Bottas is Vettel's true pace, because I think something was affecting his race today, because he clearly, especially towards the end and that sort of last half of the stint, he was well off it. So I don't know quite what was going on there. So I think we'll probably see the gap sort of close up a little bit when things are a little bit more equal. It shouldn't be surprising, because Mercedes have been the past masters always at building a really solid platform and then understanding what they've got, changing and building upon the bits that they don't work quite so well, and then just constantly improving it. And they've done that year on year on year for the last how many seasons.
But that's what a team in their groove does, isn't it? Like McLaren always used to do that. You would guarantee if a McLaren car turned up and wasn't quite at it, the team would turn it round, because somehow they'd made a up, but you know, they'd have it in them, and generally they made a good car, so they understood it. Obviously a very different story now, but you know, Mercedes are in that groove, aren't they? That is the team they have become.
Yeah, I think probably the closest comparison I can make at the moment is Red Bull. You know, from 2009, even though, you know, that wasn't necessarily their year, they were probably the fastest team overall by the end of the season, and then obviously 2010 throughout, they absolutely dominated. You know, McLaren were giving them a good challenge for a few of those years, and they were, McLaren were probably playing the role that Ferrari are playing to Mercedes at the moment. But they were very consistently on top of their game, and I think Mercedes are in that same boat at the moment. But I would say probably to an even greater degree. They seemed to, you know, Red Bull, it always seemed like it was about the design for the car, the Adrian Newey effect, and that sort of stuff. Whereas I think Mercedes have just nailed every aspect of their team structure. So development, you know, the personnel, and I don't see how they can do better. I'm sure they do, but
they'll know exactly. And of course, even in drivers now, when you think about, they have someone ready and waiting to come in who they know they would trust and would probably be very good as well.
They're a very settled team, aren't they? If you compare them to Ferrari, Oliver Bene left. So obviously they saw issues there, Ferrari last year. Red Bull, Honda engine, new driver lineup, where Mercedes are just, I say, plodding along, like I say, drivers waiting, and they're just, yeah, well oiled machine.
We literally barely spoke about them in the preview pod.
Yeah.
It was literally, it was Valtteri and it's Lewis and it's Mercedes. And that was literally it. And I think that probably said a lot more than I probably was supposed to, and indeed actually did.
Although I was amazed in pre-season testing that the car that we saw in the first test and then the car that we saw in the second test, so much different. I can't remember ever seeing a team have what is effectively an A-spec car and then a B-spec car in testing that looked that much different. Quite often that happens throughout the season, but for Mercedes, and then for them to, I was really worried at that point. I thought, oh god, they've obviously done their first car. But
a lot of people did. I think that was a view that a lot of people had. It's like, oh god, Mercedes are in trouble, and the drivers kind of played into that a little bit. Lewis going, Valtteri, yeah, we've got a bit of work to do here.
Maybe it's all an example of the how well they run. They've got the confidence to do that.
And the money, let's admit it. Okay, there are loads of ways to get in touch with us all here at the NRF1 podcast, but the best place to start is patreon.com/NRF1, where you'll find posts, videos, F1 analysis, bonus podcasts, and plenty more besides. That address again, Patreon, patreon.com/NRF1, and download the Patreon app as well, because that's very handy to keep in touch with us too. You can interact with us on there. You can post your own comments. There's a lovely community. Basically, make it your home of the NRF1. You can also interact with us on the usual social medias, of course, as well. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm giving the Instagram account plenty of love at the moment. The handle for all three is at the NRF1. You'll also find a link to our Facebook group via the Facebook page. We love getting your emails, and we do read them all. The address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. There is also the website with all the links you could possibly need to immerse yourself in this awesome podcast. That's my words, of course. The address, nrf1.uk. And New for 2019 is our WhatsApp service. You can join and submit your pictures, video and audio clips. It's a great way to get in touch and also send us your F1 fun, whatever you want. All you need to do is send us a message to 00447712486958. Right, let's fire up for the first time this season in 2019. Our eighth season. That's a lot, isn't it, DT?
Yes.
And including your pit stop impression, the NRF1 Pit Stops. Now, we are doing things slightly differently in 2019. This is going to be a more reflective stopping strategy with the pit stops. And in effect, this one today, tonight, is a one-stop pod. So we're going to stop at one garage. And of course, if there's anything else we need to cover from the rest of the field, it will be either in this podcast or our bonus Patreon edition, which you can find at patreon.com/nrf1. So we've got a one-stop pod. I asked the guys who they'd like it to be. Where are we stopping, DT?
Red Bull.
Why?
Well, for me, Red Bull this year are quite interesting. It's their first time with a new engine supply for quite some time. They managed a podium, very well-earned podium. But also, they had a very split fortunes with their two drivers. So I would have voted Verstappen my driver of the day had
gone in early.
Had he got that second place from Lewis. But, you know, a really, really great performance from him, very mature performance from him. But then Gasly was just a bit, for me, it was just a bit disappointing. I had high hopes for him sort of coming up to the big Red Bull team from Toro Rosso, but it just seems, I don't know, just there was just something missing there. I don't, maybe it's just the first race and I, you know, don't want to judge him too harshly, but yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's happened with drivers, doesn't it? And maybe with Valtteri, as we mentioned in Melbourne last year, you sort of, you lose your way early on and you find it really hard. You're almost chasing your tail from then on in. And I guess qualifying completely screwed him over and it wasn't really his fault, was it? And then maybe playing catch up in the race was a tricky one. We shouldn't underplay the podium, by the way, for Honda. It's their first podium since they've returned to the sport. Obviously, the McLaren years went so well. But, you know, it's phenomenal. And I saw things about the pace trace, was it, that sort of indicated the improvements Honda have made. And I think, you know, I have to be honest, earlier in the weekend I was looking at it thinking, yeah, I mean, we want Red Bull Honda to do well, but this is a serious amount of work. But actually, you come away from the end of the weekend thinking, well, actually, you know, you've beaten both Ferraris from what looks like on track, on pace. You've qualified pretty well. Yeah. And Max looks like a kind of a calm, I know where I'm at, I know what this team's doing, let's see where we go this year. He seems to have a bit more patience because he knows it's maybe not about this year, but about where they are in a year or two's time almost. So certainly massive, hugely promising signs.
Yeah, I mean, he drove past Vettel quite nicely with the Honda engine, so yeah, it's good signs. I mean, I was a bit of a shame there's not enough, there's a lot of love towards Honda, where they were talking, and I mentioned that was the first podium since Barrichello Silverstone 08.
Yeah, that's it, that's
in the,
it. Yeah.
In the downpour that was that year, wasn't a massive spinning round. Every lap, but I thought it was just a shame there wasn't enough Honda on the Red Bull car. There's only a little symbol, and also it's quite confusing with Aston Martin Red Bull Racing.
There's a lot more Honda. Aston Martin than Honda, which is a bit bizarre given the things powered by Honda.
Yeah, and but it is good because we need engine suppliers, and you did worry if it did keep going wrong with Honda that they would just pull out. But good times for them, and yeah, with Gasly, you kind of thought maybe a top eight from his position. I know it's hard to overtake Australia, but we may have my first race nerves with a big team, and it can't be easy going in to a team with Max Verstappen, who is wonder child of Red Bull and Helmut Marko. So thank you to him, Bahrain's next race, and that was quite a performance for him last year there, so I'm sure we'll be looking forward to that.
Yes, indeed, that is very true indeed. And it was a point you wanted to make, I think, DT, or you mentioned before we started recording, about, you know, the splits in the teammates wasn't just for Red Bull. It was kind of a lot of teams. It was almost like a driver's race rather than a team's race.
Yeah, it was. I just thought it was kind of bizarre that there were quite a few teams where the gulf between the two drivers was quite significant. It was quite noticeable. So Bottas had a great race, but Hamilton was sort of there. Had a bit of a so-so race. Vettel had a very mediocre sort of second half of the race, where, and then Leclerc drove right up to the back of him, but Leclerc had quite a sort of, it didn't have a particularly great he had a good sort of first opening lap, and then it wasn't amazing. So there was quite a big gap between those two people. Raikkonen and Giovinazzi, what they were doing with Giovinazzi, I don't know why they kept him out, because he just made it. He just ruined everybody else's race, but didn't actually. It wasn't for his own benefit.
We're just taking you all down. We're the spoilers here.
Exactly. So there's a big gulf between those guys. Obviously, Renault had a big early problem with Ricciardo. I don't think that's really more of a driver issue. It's just an unfortunate thing about teams. But they just seemed. It just seemed to be like the theme for me of Australia was that the teams were not the drivers within their individual teams were not necessarily having equally good weekends.
Which are, and the ones who struggled will be noting that for when they head to Bahrain next, of course. Right, as I said, this is a one-stop pod, so there we go. That's a one-stop. Anything else will of course be covered in the rest of this podcast and the next one. We've got loads more still to come. But what I did want to bring in at this point is our new jingle for, and in no way a Ted Kravitz ripoff, our Norfolk Notebook. Where was Ted Kravitz, by the way? Was he just not working this weekend? Because Sky seemed to have a lot. Tell you what, we'll talk about it in the Patreon podcast because it's on my NRF1 bombs. This is Norfolk Notebook. May well have escaped your attention. We are a podcast from Norfolk. We are sitting in Norfolk, in Norwich, in fact, Thorpe St. Andrew, in the Rushcutters public house where Graham Hill and Colin Chapman once shared a pint. This place is steeped in F1 history, as is Norfolk. We can claim our own world titles and world drivers. Screw you all. Wild drivers champions, anyway. Anyway, I've gone off on a rant. But the point is, this year, George Russell is from Norfolk. He was born in Norfolk. He's a Norfolk boy. He certainly is now. We've claimed him. He is, of course, Mercedes-backed and driving for Williams this year. I haven't mentioned Williams yet, have we? And Alex Albon is... he was actually born in Ipswich, but we forgive him for it. He's raced a lot in Norfolk, and he's actually backed by Norfolk sports agency Full Contact. So we're hoping to speak to those guys at some point. But Alex Albon spends loads of time in Norwich. He's a proper adopted Norfolk son, Norwich son, and we are backing him all the way, even though he drives under a Thai licence. He's effectively British in our eyes. So, and, you know, one world... We've got a global outlook, unlike a lot of the people that live in our country now. So there we go. That's basically what we're going to do in our Norfolk Notebook. We'll probably do it in the Patreon podcast more often than not, unless something really grabs us. We're well aware that one of them is in a terribly car and the other one is, you know, got a long way to go. I mean, George Russell wants to be a world champion one day. It's not going to happen this year in a Williams car, is it?
No, not a chance.
Is he going to finish anything other than either last or penultimately?
That's the only thing he can really do at the moment, is beat Kubica and beat him well, which he, in qualifying, showed that obviously Kubica hitting the wall helped. But
yeah, I was going to say, didn't really bode well, did it, for Robert's opening Grand Prix weekend?
No, and he said the reason was that's the first time he actually got out of the corner well and had grip through the corner, and that's why he hit the wall. But that sounded like a good driving excuse to me. But yeah, he's got a long way to go. It's going to be really hard to judge Russell this year. Hopefully Williams can get more competitive and climb their way up. Just at least be on the back of the midfield, because they are racing in their own series at the moment. So, but he's done everything right from the outside. It looked like he's done everything right this weekend. So,
and he might well benefit from the team improving, because if they can say that that's come from his own feedback and from his work on the team, then he does stand to benefit if the whole team can pull it together. Alex Albon, I've kind of felt, although I'm sure we'll talk about McLaren at some point, but that Toro Rosso probably the best seat out of the three for the three British rookies, and seemed a bit scratchy in practice, but actually he's quite consistent, and Franz Tost seemed happy with his performance. It was a good solid weekend, nothing spectacular, but it seemed like a reasonable starting point, given he's probably never driven the track before either, like any of the rookies.
I think it was a very mature performance. He had a few close tussles, and it's the sort of tussles where rookies have in the past ended up, you know, clashing tyres or going off, what have you, and he didn't. There were a couple of moments I noticed that I think he was racing hard, and he was, you know, but he was racing with a maturity that you wouldn't necessarily always expect from someone in their first ever Grand Prix. And I think, am I right in saying that he, during testing, he had to go around with the green flashing lights as well because he didn't have his super license and stuff?
Oh, is that right?
You know,
first time he drove an F1 car was in testing, wasn't it? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's a long way short of where Norris and Russell are because they've had so much testing last year.
Exactly. So I think fair credit to him.
That's phenomenal, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, so I think he's got... I think he's definitely, for me, he's one to watch. I'm interested to see how he does, and obviously with the Norfolk connection, I'm going to be cheering him along all the way.
We're going to be cheering him on. Maybe one day we'll get to speak to him. That would be good, wouldn't it? So that is a Norfolk Notebook. As I say, generally, it's probably going to be homed on the Patreon podcast, but we gave it to you guys all this year. Well, this week, I should say. So you're welcome. And now, of course, it's time for our Of the Weekend Awards. I bet you've all missed these. I know I have, most definitely. These are our awards given to the key people, figures and moments of each Grand Prix weekend. We start, as always, with the Rodolfo Gonzalez Driver of the Weekend. Of course, Rodolfo Gonzalez, a one-time Caterham driver from Attleborough, Norfolk's own. And what a man, too. Plus his Twitter handle, I think, was Speedy Gonzalez. So, you know, obvs. Why wouldn't you do that? Nominations then? Who? I mean, obviously, Valtteri's probably the key the key first idea for this. But who else?
Magnussen.
Unless you want to give it to him.
probably Magnussen.
Go for a Haas driver, Kyle. Yeah.
He was best of the rest, wasn't he? So, in Stroll. There's a little mention for Stroll. You know,
Daddy! Why, what did he do?
He finished ninth. In the points. Yeah.
Daddy, this team's great! Thank you so much for buying my team! Said the Canadian superstar. Which I'm doing every time now. The walking weapon. We should probably talk about the Netflix documentary at some point, because apparently it came across that no one really likes him, which is a bit hard. Daddy, why doesn't anyone like me? But anyway, enough of Lance Stroll. Okay, great shout, though.
Neither of Carl and I have watched it.
Me neither. I haven't. That was all third hand. So when we have all watched it, we will talk about it properly. Okay, good shouts like that. DT?
Carl's kind of sort of beating me to the punch, because I was going to say K-Mag, solid performance. Nothing particularly outstanding, but... definitely, you know, to finish sixth behind the people that he's finished behind, you've got to do something, even though he might not necessarily have had a great deal of camera time. He was obviously quick and consistent and just did the job he was supposed to do. I would say also a notable mention for Kvyat, coming back into the fold after not being, you know, being ousted. And you know, not only being ousted, being promoted to Red Bull, being knocked back down to Toro Rosso, and then being ousted from Toro Rosso to then come back. I thought he had a fairly solid race.
He did. I don't think he's changed, though. Because, I mean, he held Max Verstappen up, which I thought was priceless. It was just like, f*** you. I still remember you screwing me over. I'm now holding you up. Blue what? Nah, I'm not worried about that. And B, he then tried to pull out a ridiculous overtake, didn't he? I can't remember who it was on. Yeah. He slung it down the inside, went straight off, and I thought, there he is. We missed him. So for those moments. But, you know, good drama. We like drama.
He was interesting. You know, I just sort of looking down the sort of top ten, and I thought, you know, for him, and I think I was quite pleased with Raikkonen as well. You know, definitely not, you know, drive the day, but quite, you know, it's again a solid performance. And, you know, again, it could have been a difficult thing for a driver to go from, you know, you always think you're going to retire from the top teams. You know, you don't think you're going to hit the top teams and then start going back down the order again. But he seems quite happy.
Yeah, indeed. And we've got to mention him so we all remember he's still on the grid, which is good. It was Lance Stroll that Kvyat sent one down, either the inside or outside. Yes. Daddy, what's he doing? So there we go. The team of the weekend, which I'm going to label the Team Lotus team of the weekend now, because it hasn't got a title. So obviously Team Lotus, why wouldn't it be? In a race where, you know, everyone, not many teams really pulled it out. Ultimately, the way Mercedes pulled it together, or should we give it to Ferrari for the fact that they made sure Lee Clark, Charles Leclerc, did not overtake Sebastian Vettel?
Yeah. Can I give it to like Honda as a team?
Yeah,
as Honda as a team, just for the engine side. Yeah, I thought that's good race for them.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's much better.
Yeah, I'm certainly not going to give it to Ferrari because I think they really dropped the ball. bed, so to speak. I think for how we were expecting them to do, and also they're just, I don't know, they just seemed a bit of a mess compared to say Mercedes. I'm gonna have to give it to Mercedes, though. I think they, even with Hamilton's not particularly brilliant race, dominant as ever.
It is. Just on Ferrari, should they have pitted Leclerc to come in and go for the fastest lap point? But they had the gap to do it. The suggestion was that a pit stop is risky, so better not.
Was he?
It was about 35 seconds, so I don't think there was any issue.
No. No. Actually,
no. I don't think they should have done. No.
I kind of thought they would go for it, but then I would because I probably wanted something to happen. So there we go. Our Pastor Maldonado of the weekend. Who screwed it up? Who got it all wrong? I mean, there's a case here probably for Ferrari, given that they went in as favourites and came out probably scratching them all their heads collectively.
What? Daniel Avocado.
Well done for calling him Daniel Avocado. That was on my observations, yeah. How has no one come up with that before? Yeah, quite. Although, in our case, of course, Daniel Ricciardo.
Yes, I thought he...
A bit unlucky, though, wasn't he? Did he know that that bit of tarmac was there and was going to rip off his wing?
Probably not, but then maybe you shouldn't be on the grass in the first place.
Much on the grass?
No. I'm maybe being a bit harsh because there wasn't too many bad drives, really.
Still be, you can be harsh.
Yeah. But also, he's a grumpy git afterwards as well. Sort of a few interviews, he was saying, pretty much saying he does too much media work before the race and that's going to have to change.
Well, in Australia?
Or? Yeah, it was like four times mentioned it in one interview, so he's trying to get that point across.
And just then, in case I haven't mentioned this.
Yeah, and then he was being interviewed by Dutch TV and Jenny Gao from BBC 5 Live. She was doing her bit behind him and he just mouthed, "Shut the f*** up," or something.
Wow.
Yeah, not to her face to face, but yeah, because he sort of stopped and we thought, what's he thinking about? And he goes, "Oh, shut the f*** up," sort of thing.
So what were they saying?
I think she was just talking behind him.
And is Daniel Ricciardo, he f***ed his face up.
Yeah, sort of seemed to put him off. And yeah, he was a very grumpy lad. So
to those who may concern. I mean, in fairness to Danny, if I can just find it on here, it's his third retirement in the Australian Grand Prix, which is of course his home race. And likewise, we all remember the time he was on the podium, got to celebrate, and then got disqualified just to rub it in. At least he got that experience, even though it doesn't count.
Yeah, I think it's a bit unfortunate for Danny Rick, and we all like him, don't we? You know, he's good fun. He's on his day.
It's a bit frustrating though.
Yeah,
I think
he's a cracking racer. But I think for my Pastor Maldonado, I'm going to have to give it to a combination of Giovinazzi and whoever it was that decided that strategy was a good one. Because, you know, every lap you're like, are they going to bring him in now?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's staying out. Oh, but they'll definitely bring him in next lap. Oh, no, they're staying out again.
Yeah. Thumbs up for the tyres, that it was just the three tyres and a lot more straightforward.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd still like them to be three, wouldn't you?
Yeah, especially today. Yeah. Especially races like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I think we should mention the confetti man. Whoever put the amount of confetti in the machine from the podium bit. I don't know if you saw that. And just the whole... You just couldn't see, could you? It was just a sea of yellow and green. Yeah. Which is never a bad thing.
A sea of yellow and green, Kyle.
Yeah.
Lotus, Norwich City. It was a Norfolk podium.
Exactly.
We were at one with Australia.
And obviously, when the champagne or whatever it is they spray these days was being, you know, passed around, all the confetti that was then stuck to the to everything, basically.
It became a blue mess. That's what yellow and green makes, isn't it, right? In terms of a football sentence, don't ever let me say that ever again. But we're not talking football, so that's fine.
Clip that.
Clip that out. quick. Just on Gio. Giovinazzi or Antonio Giovinazzi, or as Callum and we will probably now call him in a kind of Lee Clark way, we'll call him Giovinazzi, just Giovinazzi, isn't he? Or as my lovely little boy who sat down and watched the race and qualifying with me, little star, came out going, "Go on, Daniel Ricciardo." Oh, he says Ricciardo actually, but I let him off because he's only three. I said, "Oh look, there's Antonio Giovinazzi, he's not coming in." He goes, "Oh, go, Jimmy Naxi." So I might call him Jimmy Naxi from now on because I quite like that. So there we go. That's my little boy. What a star. Final award. Okay, so let's first things first. Giuliano Salvi, moment of the weekend. Now, Giuliano Salvi has left the building.
Yes, he's apparently gone back to GT racing. So it's a bit of a shame, really.
It is a bit of a shame.
But I think he's made
a fallout.
Not from as far as I'm aware, but... I think he's made his mark in F1 and we should still celebrate him.
Yeah. Well said, exactly. And we'll always remember the day that K-Mag was running fourth and he was ridiculously excited about it. And that emphasised what we're dealing with in terms of moment of the weekend. Now, I'm going to start off here, if I may, because for me, moment of the weekend, an intensely sad moment because we lost race director. I don't think that was his latest job title. Was it like director of racing? I can't remember what it was now. Charlie Whiting. So suddenly, I remember that the... was it Friday night, and the alert popped up on my phone?
I posted it in our...
No, it was much earlier than that, wasn't it? Sorry, it was Wednesday night, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it just popped up, and I was like, oh, what? And I just couldn't believe it. So sad. And of course, as we tweeted at the time, all our thoughts were with his family and friends at such a sad moment to lose such... a great man. Everyone spoke so warmly and fondly of him. We, the fact we're sat here talking about Formula One and doing this podcast is testament to Charlie Whiting and all the work he's done for the sport. Just a phenomenal man and figure in terms of Formula One. The tributes that were paid spoke volumes. People had it on their cars, of course, and just so many warm words.
Yeah. I tweeted at the time, and I don't think I can put any sort of better words together than I did at the time, and I basically said I'm sad to hear that Charlie Whiting has taken the chequered flag. Few people have done as much for the sport as he has. It's a great loss, but what a great life. So I think that he's just such a massive part of the sport, and it's very sad to see him not be part of it anymore. But what a legacy, what an amazing thing that he's just done some really fantastic things for the sport, for the safety, and he will be forever, he will be part of F1.
I think there was a couple of comments. Firstly, there was a little Sky done a special interviewed Bernie Eccleston and his friend and colleague Herbie Blash. I think he said he was Mr. Formula One, and when you think about it, he was. I mean, he's done everything in it, and he was sort of the centre of Formula One on a race weekend. And also, I think our very own Martin Brundle said it's 35 or 36 years he's been going to a racetrack, and it's the first time Charlie's not been in there. And you think, wow, it's sort of a legacy that is sad, but he's done a lot of good work for F1, and that will carry on.
Death comes to us all, doesn't it? And sometimes it's more unexpected and quicker than we'd like. But legacy, what a phenomenal legacy to leave. I hadn't really appreciated he'd started, as a mechanic and then worked his way through. He was a man who seemed to have the respect of the teams, of, say, the FIA, pretty much of the fans generally, and of the drivers. I mean, I don't know how... I think there was something said where he basically... they worked out that he does about four people's jobs in terms of what he was doing, and quite how Formula One moves on, of course, from here, and replaces, if that's the right word, what Charlie has done, and going forwards, that's going to be a big call. But I mean, in the drivers' press conference, they were very clear, obviously, to talk about the drivers' feelings about losing Charlie so suddenly. But I'm glad that I think they finally came to Daniel Ricciardo, and he was like, well, you know what, I'm going to turn this round. What a man. Look at what we've got. Look at what he's done. Just an incredible impact on the sport, making it what it is. And I think for that, that's completely what everyone was saying. Rather than sorry and condolences, but thank you, Charlie Whiting.
Hello, everyone. This is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers. Okay, we rate the race, which is always good, unlike the races, which are not always good. Now, unless we haven't even spoken about the fastest lap point, not properly anyway. I mean, that worked quite nicely. I still don't understand, I must admit, if someone records a fastest lap when they're outside the top 10 and then gets into the top 10, does that lap then count? Or do you have to record the lap when you're in the top 10? Likewise, if you record it when you're in the top 10 and then drop out, does that mean that the lap time goes to whoever is in the top 10?
I think it's just based on their finishing position. So if you finish in the top 10 and you get the fastest lap, you get a point. But if you're outside of the top 10 when the checkered flag drops, but you've got the fastest lap, it doesn't count. And I think the reasoning behind that, at least as far as I understand it, is that it stops teams lower down the order from just slapping on a new set of tyres on the last couple of laps and just doing something silly. Obviously, it doesn't stop teams in the top 10 doing that, but the stakes are a bit bigger for a team that's already fighting for points. Yeah, okay. So if you're not fighting for any points, you can go, well, if I come 13th or I come 16th, it's not going to matter. But if I can just whack some new tyres on and then bash in an epic lap, then I'll get a point, kind of thing.
Do the team get the point as well, or is it just the driver?
They do.
It's quite interesting. Christian Horner said they were thinking about bringing in Gasly to try and do a faster lap, even though he's 11th, to take away the point from possibly Mercedes or Ferrari, which I thought was quite an interesting sort of little strategy thing. Which quite interesting.
He'd had to have finished in the...
Well, no, because if he'd have got it and finished 11th, nobody would have got the point.
Oh, so you could still take that point off?
Yeah. So you can imagine, last race of the season, sort of like a you know, say Vettel needs 26 points to win. Yeah. Hamilton's not in the race, but Bottas is 15th. They could bring in Bottas a few laps to go just to get the fastest lap off Vettel.
I mean, two quick things we're going to say, because I don't know how we do it, but we've gone on. One, and everyone was going on about how they weren't bothered about it and it means nothing to anyone. And then we get to the last 5-10 laps of the race and everyone's like, hell, I need this point. I don't care where I am, I need this point. What are we doing? No, I've got to get this point. Oh, what do you mean I'm winning the race? I also need this point. I need 26 points. 25 isn't enough. Brilliant. A view into a racing driver's mind. Literally, I can take 26? Oh yeah, I want 26. So that's a fair point. And two, how bad would the race have been if we hadn't have had that in the last five laps?
Yeah, I think I thought it sort of summed up the end of the race, that the commentator's getting very excited by 1 point fastest lap, and you're like, surely you want a bit more happening towards the end of a race to not really worry about fastest lap, and it's just an extra little bonus. But yeah,
let's be honest, it was a pretty poor race, wasn't it?
It was pretty average. Yeah,
yeah. I wonder, is this point thing, is it a gimmick? Is it a gimmick, or is it a genuine kind of thing just to sort of change things up a bit? I don't think we'll be able to tell just on this race alone, but it is, like you say, it's very interesting to hear some of the drivers talking about, you know, Lewis coming on the point. He's like, I need that point, man. I need that point. And then, you know, Valtteri coming on the radio, sort of sounding like a Valtteri they haven't really heard before. He's like, I know, I want 26 points. I, you know, like, they're like, as in, like, they're mine.
And both Mercedes drivers had agreed and been told before the race that they weren't going to bother chasing it. And then you get that's the bit I love. It's such a psychology thing. Anyway, let's rate the race, shall we? We didn't race it in 2017. In 2018, we gave this race 6 out of 11. I'm not expecting us to remember necessarily last year's Inside Out, but I think it was pretty bang average again last year, and we were a little bit worried about the season. So it's probably worth something similar. But what do you reckon, Carl? What'd you give it?
I suppose based on last year, I'd give it a 5.5.
That's exactly what I was going to say, 5.5.
I'm going to give it a 6, just, and the only thing that elevates it, I think, it was a solid, good fun midfield battle that did elevate the racing, and if that wasn't present, I probably would drop it down to a 4.
Ouch. And who will be wearing the biggest smile as they take their private jet back from Melbourne?
Albon. Oh, he seems a smiley chap, so I'll go for him.
Well, normally Danny Rick, he wasn't smiling, as we know, too many media commitments.
Yeah, I was going to say Bottas, but he's finished, isn't he? So it's not.
He was smiling today.
Was smiling today, yeah, but it's still not going to be the biggest smile, is it? Even though I would say probably the boss of Honda engines, probably that's the biggest, probably going to be the biggest smile.
I don't know his name either. That's no. Fine. Okay, there will be
my guy.
That guy. We'll find out at some point. There will be much more chat about the 2019 Australian Grand Prix to come, alongside all the major talking points away from the track. Just check out patreon.com/NRF1 right after this pod. Indeed, Patreon is our own little NRF1 club, and we'd love for you to become a member and immerse yourself in the world's greatest sport alongside us. You'll get access to all our bonus podcasts, videos, blogs, posts. There will also be exclusive t-shirts eventually, posters, stickers, badges. I've set the bar quite high on all this. I think this is what I wrote last year. Official entry into the Prediction League, that is definitely happening, with prizes after every Grand Prix, live interactive videos, all sorts. And if there's anything you would like to be included in those podcasts, or this podcast, let us know. You can download the app or visit patreon.com/NRF1 and join us for real. You can also catch all of our NRF1 podcast Grand Prix reviews by subscribing via your podcast player of choice. Just visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe and you will find the link for you, be it iTunes, Audioboom, Google Podcasts, Deezer, Spreaker, Stitcher, Acast, Spotify or Radio Public. And if your player is missing, God knows how, then please let us know with an email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And if you listen to us via iTunes, please rate and review us. We like that. The quick link is nrf1.uk/is on iTunes. Now, Kyle, we should mention we've got a big weekend coming up, haven't we? On the 24th of March, that is a Sunday, we've got our own Grand Prix effort coming up.
Yes, nice little two-hour endurance race
in karts,
Ella Park, yeah, the just over the Norfolk Suffolk border, yeah. Isn't it technically?
In Beccles, which of course, you know, Beccles, two times Beccles kart champion. This is a reliving past glories and maybe beating them.
Yeah, it's been a while since it was 08 and 09. I think I was racing there.
It's like Robert Kibitz.
Yeah, so I was, yeah, I remember racing there before it was even a track. Then there was like an old airfield and So spent a fair amount of time there. So it's always good to go back. And it's a very good kart track.
It is a great kart track. Yeah. It's hosts some really top national kart racing. And you're very good at telling me the best things to do around the track, which I've forgotten since last year. We did do it last year. I've forgotten since then, so I'm going to be picking your brain for them again.
I did do a GoPro video on my chest to try and show... I'll find it somewhere.
Yes, please. Yeah, send that on the WhatsApp group. Yes. WhatsApp group. Yeah. I want to see that. So yeah, it's really exciting. It's raising money for the Norwich City Community Sports Foundation, which is, of course, basically the football club's charity arm. Does so much brilliant work in Norfolk. It's great to be a part of the team. We've got two teams of three races, so that's 2 hours between three people. It's a long time in a car. So it's going to be probably a quick team and a slow team, I think. So that's obviously Kyle and Callum, who's like weighs about 3 stone, and then someone else, possibly Rich, because he weighs about 2 stone, because he's quite quick. But it might be me, haven't decided yet. Or we don't know how quick Phil Gray is and his wizardy beard. I reckon he might be quite quick. So that's us five, and then Alex as well, who might also be quick. I've never seen him in a car before. So, and he's Italian, so you know, and a Ferrari fan. So if he's not quick, we're all really. So and it's got a great, you know, racing name. Alessandro Essa Fumagalli is you know, literally born to win a Grand Prix. Yeah, exactly. So that's exciting. We'll try and keep you up to date with how it gets on the day via the usual social media channels, and of course patreon.com/NRF1, and let you know how we get on. We finished fourth last year, didn't we? We only had one team, but that one team finished fourth.
Yeah, just off the podium. I think we were 20 seconds off the podium, roughly about that.
And I had a stint in slicks, but the only stint where it rained, and I just spent all the time spinning around going, what the I can't do this. I literally was like, I cannot do this. And then I kind of got the hang of it, so I had newfound appreciation for anyone driving in wet conditions. So we'll see how we get on it. Fair to say that I think the top two teams last year were like basically professional kart teams, and I imagine it's going to be the same again this year.
They look very small as well. We finished
about where we probably possibly could finish.
Also got hit the arse by Jake Humphrey in his cart before even the race started. So obviously he learned some dirty tricks from his time in the F1 paddock.
DC probably taught him that. So race two, Bahrain. Did we work out what time it starts? Our time in the end. Australia started at 5:10 this morning. I set my alarm and didn't make it, so I watched it at 7. Do you know what time it is?
Four p.m.
Oh, you were right. Sorry, I shouldn't have doubted you. Four p.m. Well, that'll be exciting.
Mother's Day as well.
Mother's Day, is it?
Yeah.
Not going to get away with that one. Brilliant. Okay, so that's exciting. And of course, it's a night race, isn't it, now in Bahrain? Yeah. So that's all good. All we're really going to see is how things follow on from the opening race. So there's probably not much to preview there. I'm going to end it because we're already running over time. Instead, let's get a prediction from you all, shall we? We do our full predictions, capped at 5, of course, per Grand Prix. You can hear all of those in our bonus Patreon podcast, but we'd like to take one from the boys and girls now, so everyone can hear it. And this, of course, is entry into our prediction league. So, Kyle, do you want to go first?
Yep. Leclerc win. Or Lee Clark win.
What now? You think Charles Leclerc is going to win the Bahrain Grand Prix?
Yeah, Ferrari will be strong there. Just a random
thing. But you don't think Seb will win it?
No.
Wow. Well, I'm going to take your advice. I'm going to say Sebastian Vettel is going to win then.
I think Hamilton will be back on top.
Oh! So Ferrari won't be strong there?
I think they'll be strong. I think certainly stronger than Australia, and also Bahrain is traditionally a track that Ferrari tend to be quite strong on, I think. But I think Lewis will address whatever problem they had today, that he obviously seems to have some sort of grasp on, and I think he'll bounce back and he'll be back on it.
We love pronunciations. We, of course, got to get our heads around Nico Hülkenberg, which popped up on our season preview as well. So there we go. Brilliant stuff. So they are a bit of our predictions, but of course do our full 5 or fewer over in the Patreon podcast. If you want to enter the Prediction League, it's so dead simple. The official Prediction League comes with Patreon membership, so you can check that out over at patreon.com/NRF1. And you can make up to 5 predictions. You have to get them in before the start of FP1 that race weekend. You can do that on the Patreon app and website, or you can do it on the social media channels. Doesn't really matter where in particular. Send us an email. If you then produce the best prediction score that weekend, you win a £5 credit to either motorsport-merchandise.com or the Classic Team Lotus shop. and we accumulate those over the course of the season. And then at the end of the season, you can get whatever you want on us in terms of your credit. So it's well worth taking part. And of course, we keep a standings tally of the season as a whole as well, with a thoroughly complex algorithm. But you don't have to be a Patreon member. You can also join in for fun as well. You just appreciate it might take me a little bit longer to update your standings and results. And of course, you won't win a prize if you do really well. So, you know, if you want to play the lottery, might as well buy a ticket, aren't you? Fantasy League. Now, we didn't, I think we weren't going to bother doing it, and then a couple of people asked. We haven't started doing it, which I think means we missed the first race, so we're going to be but we were last year anyway. So we will probably, before the start of Bahrain, set up a Fantasy League league that anyone can join as well, probably called the NRF1 Podcast League. So that'll be around about. I don't think we'll have a team that we pick ourselves, because we just got in a load of arguments. But maybe we should. I don't know. Maybe. What do you reckon, Carl? Should we have an NRF1 Podcast League team?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
All right. We'll set up a podcast team that we'll democratically select. And we'll have our own ones as well. Although, have you set one up already?
I haven't, no.
Have you, DT?
No.
Brilliant. So that's a great starting point. We'll see who's really bad at it compared to being slightly averagely bad. Brilliant. Well, in that case, we are done. If you want to hear more from us, including our full predictions and any remaining Australian Grand Prix fallout, we might preview Bahrain a little bit more, then make sure you take in our exclusive bonus Patreon podcast. For that and a whole load of extra content, patreon.com/NRF1. I think I've mentioned the address enough times now already. We will return with E240, 240 podcasts, woof, and more. That is, of course, our Bahrain review podcast, and we'll have another bonus Patreon edition to follow that. That's all shortly after round two of the 2019 Formula One World Championship. In the meantime, it's thanks to Future Radio, thanks to the Rush Cutters, of course, and goodbye from the crew, from Kyle. Goodbye, Carl.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, TT. Thanks for coming in.
Adios.
Goodbye from me. Good night to you all. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We will see you on the other side of Sakhir. Until then, good night.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.